Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
I'm so
close. I know, I'm ready. Yeah, 70 days sober.
Props to you, girl.
I know, yeah. Girl, I'm impressed.
Props 70. To you.
That's impressive.
That was what we asked.
I'm taking a year off, like a full year.
Yeah,
so that I've got a long ways to go, yeah.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot about myself. It's been very eye-opening, for real.
Okay, I feel like we need to talk about that offline.
Okay, we're all, you know, everybody's right. Sound is checked out. Everything is good.
Why would you do that?
All right. Okay. All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. We are here for our first roundtable, for lack of a better term, right now, of 2019. It's Friday night, and we actually need your help in naming this. We have our friends gathered. We're drinking, for those of us who are drinking, and we're going to be talking about innovation current events. So if you have an idea of what you can call us, we're going to be introducing everyone here in just a moment, send it to us over at... You send it to Sia because Sia needs this. So
Sia enjoys getting random.
And I'm gonna give the more difficult name SYYA instead of Aaron. Just we're gonna go the hard name. Sia SYYA at innovationcalling.com. So send Miss Sia a message of what you think we should name this roundtable. So first of all, I know, I'm sorry I'm saying roundtable, but first of all, real quick, March 6th is almost here, which is our first Women in Tech Leadership event. We're going to do a live innovation calling podcast recording, if I can say that, down at the Network Bar in Dallas. So jump over to innovationcalling.com to get your tickets. We're going to have wine. We always have to have wine. We're going to have food, and we're going to have some amazing networking. So innovationcalling.com to grab your ticket. So Kurt, we're going to go to you. We'll go around the table. Everybody introduce yourself, please, for tonight.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm Kurt Kelly, CEO of Accelerated Technology Consulting, and we focus on taking people from ideation to implementation.
Adam, I function as fractional CTO for startups, as well as right now CTO for StatusJet.
Hi, guys. This is Leslie Flores, founder and CEO of Moments by Design. We are a party-in-a-box solution for you, so no more stressing about all of your party needs.
And this is Michael Flores. I'm CTO for Moments by Design.
I'm Sia, and Aaron forgot to introduce me.
No, I didn't. I thought you were going to go around the table. I didn't even introduce me.
That's okay. Okay. I'm just occasionally the co-host, and apparently the person that's going to receive all the emails at SYYA at innovationcalling.com. To my left are a silent pair. We call them the silent couple. And just go ahead and say hello simultaneously, you two. Just say hello.
Hello.
Excellent. All right. So let's kick off our third, and I know I said I didn't want to say this, but our third Happy Merry Roundtable of Merry Misfits.
I just realized we could have had everybody tweet too, but this is what happens when you come up with an idea like 2 seconds before you hit record.
After the fact, right?
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
So let's kick off our roundtable. So lots of stuff in the news. And lots of fun stuff we already talked about that we don't want to have recorded because our opinions may or may not be held against us. So the first thing I'd like to talk about, Samsung Galaxy Fold. I'm a Samsunger, and I love my Samsung. I don't care for the iPhone. And with the decline of the iPhone and this particular product, you guys, what's so special about it?
You know, I mean, with this new Android, I think you've got, you know, hey, it's a flip phone. It's got a nice price tag on it, $2,000. So I think you're going to see a lot of people kind of scare away from it, from that. You've got Apple that's coming into the market with their own, you know, probably within the next 2 years. But again, I mean, I don't know if there's anything that's really that special about it besides the fact that now you've got a foldable screen, which, I mean, it's the first time we've seen it. It's cool tech. You know, I mean, CNET had a lot to say about it, but I don't, you know, functionality and everything kind of the same from all the Samsung phones.
Well, but it's going back to smaller. And I think, like, you know, Apple just keeps introducing, and it's really hard. Well, I guess if you're unfolding it, though, but I think that's the, like, it goes back to smaller with the functionality we need, where you can carry it around, you can put it in your pocket. I mean, these phones keep getting bigger and bigger, and it just, it's more like an iPad versus a phone. So that's what intrigues me about it. I don't even use my $1,000 phone to its full capability. I'm not about to double down, but it looks cool.
It's an interesting, it's like a beta test, right? You know, and putting out a new technology into the field, it's not unlike when Apple first did a touchscreen phone. Everybody's like, oh, I want a touchscreen phone. I've got my tactile buttons and that's everything. So now you've got this out there and it's like, oh, it's really expensive. It's interesting at the price point. That kind of puts it into the diehard range, right? Only the Samsung diehard elites are going to get in there and really get into it. So you have less chance of a backlash of it's not what I want or it's not meeting the functionality. And the screen size isn't that much bigger than a larger phone that is out there now. So it's more about perfecting that fold and getting a foldable screen. That's kind of the interesting part for me.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One, there's a bigger foldable screen. There's a TV that actually rolls up.
Yeah, that's LG. Now.
Yeah, that thing is way cool. That, I think, is more interesting use of foldable screen technology. I think we're just kind of tinkering around with stuff. And nobody kind of talked about Red and Red Camera's holographic screen, which is truly holographic. That was also another thing that came out in the last year and is available at the AT&T store from a company that's known for optics.
I'm sorry, so, Reds? I've never heard of them.
No. Red. So nobody's ever heard about it outside of the industry, right? So it's, again, one of those companies that nobody ever talks about, like Gemalto or Gesheki and Devrient or whatever. Red is a former founder of Oakley's left, Oakley Sunglasses left, and created the first 4K camera. Now they make the Red Epic, which is 8K and 16K cameras. They're higher res than what IMAX used to have. They were like, IMAX used to be the highest res camera. Now it was Red. They're the professional grade cameras that have giant millimeter sensor. Everything you know has been shot on it. Everything from Transformers to all the Marvel movies, everything else is shot on this particular camera. So the interesting thing is they're a well-known company. They, for whatever reason, came out into the cell phone company thing. I mean, they're well-known for all sorts of other interesting things like 1 terabyte per gig. Or no, sorry, 1 terabyte per gig. One gig per minute of footage. So they had to have a hard drive and all sorts of other stuff. They were one of the first with hard drive cameras. And nobody's talked about their phone that has true holographic screen phone or like cell phone screen, whatever. So, yeah.
You bring up a good thing about the foldable, you know, TV from LG. As you know, they've been talking about wearable tech and what's the next big thing for that. And, you know, the unused space is your wrist, right? That's the best spot for something now that you could use, that you could wear and always have access to. So it'd be really interesting to see if this foldable tech could turn into a bigger, like a bracelet type setup or like a bangle type thing that rolls out onto your arm and sits there. And you could, it would be really interesting. And, you know, they do this with like different ways of doing it, but if it could be malleable and then also, it could get rigid depending on whether you wanted to use it as a standalone phone and just let it rest on your arm in a kind of a folded setup.
So that was out at CES this year too. They had the bangle wristband screens, which was really cool, but again, not functionality wise. They haven't thought it all the way through yet.
Okay.
But to your point, yes.
So that was going to be my next question, which is, what does this mean for the likes of Apple? They themselves have said it's the end of the heyday of the iPhone. Are we looking at the end of the mobile device as we understand it today?
I think we have to be. I mean, Apple really hasn't innovated much since, what was it, 11 years ago that the iPhone came out? I mean, it just gets different, but it really hasn't changed.
Some feature sets that may or may not be worth the price point, right?
Well, I mean, and just look, like it was the music one. What was it called?
iPod.
And then it was and then you could carry music and run with it. I used to have the CD player and run with that. And you'd be like,
jumping. And it would skip as
you ran. Yeah, it was skipping while you ran. I'm like, oh, okay.
I still have that, by the way. And I love
it. But do you still have your Walkman is the question.
I do. I have the Walkman. I have my CD still. Thank you.
But I mean, just think of like how that was. And then the iPhone. And then there hasn't been anything to come out since where it's been like, whoa, this changes everything.
Yeah.
And it has to be. I don't think we can keep riding this wave without really innovating.
So if we are going to assume wearables is the next best thing, then what's after wearables? Injecting it into us, like the, you know, we're microchipping ourselves?
I kind of feel like we're there too. I mean, there are certain companies, now they're doing this in Europe right now, where they actually are RFIDing their employees, and the employees actually get So the employees get the right to say yes, and they love it because they're no longer having to carry badges. They know when they're on campus, they basically don't have to like pay for anything because they just put their chip up, their hand up.
And it's not just Europe. Actually, there's a large company that's doing it here in Minnesota as well.
And in Dallas too.
Yeah, there's quite a few companies that are doing this. So this is not unheard. I mean, like yeah, that. And then also the other thing is the contact lens.
Yeah, I was going to say the one that really gets me is if we could get into optics and just put it in an implantable lens, something like that. You know, you talk about, you know, they did this a little bit with Google Glass back in the day, as that kind of tech thing, right? You can look at different things and it would automatically prompt you. And if we could get the feedback that, you know, when you look at something, it could read your muscles and your eye to say, yeah, I'm really interested in that. I want to know more. And you start getting the nonverbal type stuff where it's AI, which I know we're going to get to later, but that's really where this could all go. That's a whole nother level of tech. You know, it's kind of hit a peak. Now it's software using tech.
So go back to the optical lensing. I'm trying to understand. So you're saying if you decide to wear some contact lens or something that can be injected into your eyeball, where by motion of your eyes, it says, I'm hitting left for, I'm swiping left or I'm swiping right?
Yes.
That also, yeah. But then also like right now I could see you and then your LinkedIn profile next to you.
Yeah.
So that'd be like an augmented reality.
It'd be a heads up display.
So you have like a mashup between reality versus the data set that comes in on top.
So kind of, yeah. I mean, and you see it a lot in the movies, right? Where they've got like the cool little eyepiece and it's telling them everything about the person that they're looking at. And basically this would bring that to life. You even see it in the kids movies. What was one of the Lego movies? They did the exact same thing but you see it. And I mean, it's prevalent not only in the adult movies, but even in, something as simplistic as Lego movies for kids.
Okay, so here's where I'm going to talk about paranoia with this, because I know like the optic thing might be a little annoying, but like, okay, so our social security numbers, that's a door into our identity, right? You take my social security number, we can figure something out. What I always got freaked out about was giving my fingerprint away, my eye, like your optics away. You start giving this stuff away, people are like, I won't do facial recognition on my iPhone either, because I don't want people having my fate, like, because you start giving this stuff away and people have access to it, just like your social security number. At what point are we like, anybody can steal anything? We have a new guest coming,
which is shocking.
All right, so we had a pause. We had a new guest arrive. Introduce yourself. What's your sign?
I'm Cancer.
Okay. Do you, what hospitals do you like? Exactly.
So can't officially speak on behalf of it.
His name is Aaron.
Right. So, but I will ask him this question, which is, you are a general tech nerd and geek, and so what is your job, sort of day to day job function?
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know.
No, I'm giving you crap. I did ask you what your sign was.
I'm 100% fine with giving crap. that's my life. So my job is I help run an innovation lab for a Fortune 50. We explore research, new technology, and determine how we can apply that to our business in terms of solving business challenges for, we're a CPG company, so you can go through the Fortune 50 and figure it out.
We don't want to, because we like to keep you around. So on that note, going back to what Aaron was talking about, Aaron, I'm sure going to have some fun editing.
It's okay.
So what you're talking about, Aaron, completely reminds me of the optic lenses. If we are going to allow ourselves to have some kind of device, something into our eyeballs, I cannot help but think Black Mirror yet again. I think I'm going to, it's my goal in life.
I need to watch this show.
Every episode is going to be a Black Mirror reference, but you know what episode I'm talking about, right?
That's exactly what we're talking. So I know, so as you're nodding as well, so, you know, that's exactly what we're talking about, is the fact that you have that implantable, you can rewind and do all sorts of other stuff. That's exactly what we were thinking as far as optics and heads up display.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to do a massive segue here because. So
go for it.
UK's got their Black Mirror, which I absolutely love. Not necessarily getting compensated for it, but maybe if you want to.
Real quick, back up. Explain what Black Mirror is for somebody not, because I had no idea what it was until you talked about it.
Well, this is what, okay, so you cut me off. So the equivalent in America is about to get launched, and it is Jordan Peele's version of Twilight Zone.
Okay, but what is Black Mirror?
Black Mirror is
a show. It's going to be a modern version of Twilight Zone.
No, actually, it exists on Netflix today.
Yeah, oh, no, of course it is.
As a show, and that's what I think Aaron's asking.
Yeah, like,
Black
Mirror somebody what Black Mirror
is a show on Netflix that you can watch, and it is a Twilight Zone /... what was the other one? There was Twilight Zone, and there was one other one that was like that.
Outer Limits.
Yeah. Well, with Aaron's comment, though, with, you know, hey, kind of how much are we giving up right now? And I know we've kind of hit on this on a couple of other segments. But, okay, dependent upon what sector you work in right now, some of that is already being given up. You know, with my background being in finance, I've already given my fingerprints out for years, you know, because the minute, because of SEC regulations and everything, I already had, I mean, everybody has my fingerprints on file.
I had mugshots, my fingerprints.
There you go. That's another story. We need to hear that one.
That time, but, you
know?
Yeah,
but for real. I mean, and dependent upon whether or not your company, you know, has some sort of retinal scanner or something, you know, on some of the levels, maybe, you know, labs that you're allowed into or not, your retina scan may already be on file. I mean, I know my fingerprints are already on file with the U.S. government because of my background in finance. So dependent upon where you worked and what you've done in your life, you may have already given up.
So do you just say screw it?
I mean, I think it's a little bit easier for those of us that have kind of maybe given up some of that part of control. I mean, I gave up that control in my 20s, right? You know, with my fingerprints. So am I a little bit more inclined to say, yeah, all right, you know, hey, if we need to do a retinal scan and it means that I'm going to be able to get everything just by my contact lens that I have to put in anyway, great, let's do that, you know. But I mean, somebody else that maybe doesn't, you know, and doesn't already have things on file, they may be a little bit more hesitant.
Well, I think it comes, you know, go all the way to like the whole Minority Report thing where people are scanning your retina and broadcasting advertisements just to you. But, you know, as part of our exploration, we did definitely look at, you know, facial recognition as part of what we do. And it was really just the demographic facial recognition. But as soon as we started doing that, as soon as we started saying, yeah, we can look at demographics and we can tell if someone's happy or if someone's angry or how they are interacting, the very first thing that people inside the company are asking is, can we recognize individuals? Can we actually put like names to faces? Can we get personally identifiable? And right now there are still, you know, I think legal challenges where our legal departments, you know, there are states in the U.S. where they're very, you know, if you start to recognize a person, you have to opt in. It's an opt-in. It's not an opt-out.
Yeah.
You have to sign a waiver saying, yes, it's okay for you to do that. But that's now, right? You know, and I think as these technologies start to get more ubiquitous, how are we going to deal with that? And right now, we do have some legal departments, especially at large companies, that are worried about liability. But it only takes a couple of companies having success with this and showing positive balance sheet impact for other companies to jump on the bandwagon. And then, you know, like you said, it's not just because I work in finance that I've given up my fingerprints. It's because I walk into a grocery store, I'm giving you my identity. And the only option is a sign on the door that says, hey, if you don't agree to us consuming your identity and your likes and your dislikes, don't walk in, don't log on to this website, don't, you know, sign up for this service, don't buy tickets online, you know. And you start to see that slippery slope where you say, how long until you won't be able to do anything at all online without someone asking you to give up incrementally that privacy and that identity piece.
So that's so funny you should mention it. I mentioned in many other podcasts, by the way, so I am the tinfoil hat, just so you know. And
I was going to say, we share that. Kurt,
yeah. We share that.
Like, there's a lot of us that share that hat.
That hat's big enough for everyone.
Yeah. And it's mighty effective. But no, I absolutely have, and I do it because of certain influences in my household. If I am buying something that is considered healthy, like vegetables, you know, fresh fruits, maybe simple toiletries. Oh, sure. I'll buy that with the club card or whatever marketing card that grocery has. If I'm buying wine, scotch, more junk wine, some potato chips, it's all cash. And it's so funny because people behind you are like, lady, are you doing really two different transactions? And I'm like, hell yeah, I am. Because I don't want to get trapped.
You need to wear a tinfoil hat when you're grocery shopping. You're like, yeah. I am using two different transactions.
I can see keeping a separate credit card for all of my alcoholic purchases just so that I know how much spend, because then I can look back at it and maybe do a year off like one of ours truly.
I think it could go with
some sort of, you know, like prepaid Visa or something like that.
Oh, there you
go.
Yeah.
But like that's essentially, you know, if you don't want to carry a bunch of cash, there are ways around it. But to her point, anything that's got your name on it will eventually funnel back and connect to everything else.
Oh, yeah.
That, well, I mean, we know. Like, you know, as someone who works for a CPG and we get, you know, Nielsen data, IRI data, all this other data from you know, these companies, their job is literally to take all of your purchasing data, all of your personal data, aggregate it and pipe it back in an anonymized format. But as we saw when I think AOL released all of their anonymized search data, it took people a day before they were able to figure out exactly who half the people were. Like, yep, I can know who that is. I know who that is.
Yeah.
Just by your search results.
Well, and it was, I mean, we've talked about this too with even like Target, right? I mean, Target knows when women are pregnant before the woman even knows she's pregnant based upon what she's buying, which is crazy. I mean, but it's all big data.
So there's that. And then I was just about to say the Target example, but it's the most known example. And then, back in the, like, one of my previous jobs, working with another previous employer of somebody else at the roundtable, we designed a smart shopper thing. So within 10 feet or 10 seconds of you entering the store, you would get a push notification on your phone saying, welcome back to, you know, Aaron, Kurt, whoever. Like, you just get instantly that notification on your phone. And then based on the notification, it's like, hey, we know you were looking for jeans or toilet paper or whatever it would be, and get that information for you. And then also we were planting about one camera every 5 square feet in the store, and it was able to see everything, hotspot the data, see exactly where anybody was going. And then based on that, also hotspot, we track individual people and know where they were idling at, what was causing their decision consternation or not decision consternation.
So that's very interesting because
I see it. You got it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's been trying to like cut in for like 20 minutes.
Mike, you know better than that. Just speak.
It's a moment by design.
It's a moment by design. Yeah, there you go. So it's interesting because, you know, I'm reading a book right now that is talking about, I think we're going to talk about AI later, but between China and the US. And there's a huge difference in, I guess, the paradigms that are going into it. And it's funny what we're talking about. Like, yeah, look, we've got this. We developed this app. And we have these things to look at heat mapping and all that. China has blown us out the water.
Yeah. I mean, Xbox Plus has been doing that for years.
Yeah, Xbox Plus. So they've talked about the big shift between the US methodology of using AI and China's methodology of using AI, because they're less risk averse than we are. So we're all here talking about our privacy, talking about what's going to do this. AI is being considered by many as the next great revolution, right? We're talking, you know, combustion engine, we're talking internet, you know, the steam engine, that type of stuff is really changing the way we look at it. And it was interesting to hear everyone here talk about it. It was so perfect, exactly how the book says, this is how Americans think about AI and what we don't want to do and why it could hinder us and make us second, because we won't progress fast enough because we're hindering ourselves from getting big data, because we talk about big data and all that coming out and we talk about not getting enough data here, there or whatever. That's the next way to do it, right? If you have great engineers and you make a leap in progress, that's fantastic. But if you have good engineers and a ton of data, you could be more economically profitable. And that's the big difference.
Well, so, and just let me say this real quick too, because there, what is the, I can say it, Stadia. Is it a, what's the exact term?
Accelerator. Stadia Accelerator. Yeah.
So I don't think you were there for the meeting on Friday. One of the companies coming in this round is actually they will scan events.
Oh, no, I was there.
Sporting. Yeah. Okay, you were there when he announced that one? That will scan sporting events. So they can see the demographic. They can see who you are. They can see if you're a season ticket holder and not showing up for your games. And they will be able to. And so to your point, if I'm walking into the stadium, I'm saying, all right, then don't go to the game if you don't like it. But they're actually scanning this and giving that data to sponsors. And so they know people who, what you look like, your age.
I don't look my age, first off.
I know. I was like, I need to go get some Botox. So they put me in the 30-year-olds. But go ahead, Sia. What were you going to say?
No, but Mike, you just brought up the whole AI and the fact that the United States has a big pushback with the whole concept of AI and that China embraces it more so. Now, I can go into much more deeper issues as to why I think culturally it's been 100%. More acceptable for different reasons. Strong government. But that actually brings up my next topic, which is Google and Microsoft warns investors that bad AI could harm their brand. And in previous podcasts with Raj Daniels, CJoy Olicle, Carl Copeland, who we just had on our most recent podcast.
Well, it was Corey who talked about AI.
But Carl did also talk about AI as
robotic.
Well.
Robotic, okay.
But around robotics. But if Google and Microsoft are already concerned in talking to their investors about how AI is perceived, what chances do startups have that have AI as part of their business and they are trying to make an impact, and whether society will embrace it or corporations embrace AI?
Well, and I think to Mike's point, you know, going back to something he said, is you sort of enter this, it's sort of a catch-22 where AI is sort of the promise of the future where technology is concerned. It's also probably the most troubling of those promises. And so do we get into a situation where we end up kind of looking like Luddites, where we're like, no, we're not going to embrace this technology, and then we get left behind as these, you know, they're talking about like systems where you have automatic transportation, you know, self-driving cars. Well, everybody knows that the best self-driving car system would be for every car to be a self-driving car, and it just to be a centrally controlled system where there's no human input. Well, China can do that. We can't, right? We will never be able to do that, but China could just mandate it, and they can get away with things like that. And so what ends up happening is it's not, yes, it's pushing a culture issue, but it's also pushing technology boundaries. And there's a risk that, you know, where culture starts to interfere with technology, where do we become like old China or the old, you know, Persian Empire, where they went to where they got to a certain point where they were the most advanced societies in the world, and then culturally they stopped, and then we, you know, industrial revolution, and we you know, sort of built the next level. But then do we risk, you know, US and Europe with like GDPR and things like that being that next, you know, we just stop technological progress because we're kind of scared of what's next.
But
it's balance, I think.
Well, I feel like, to your point, though, I feel like we're kind of there in some aspects in certain things. You know, like you look at pharmaceuticals, right? Like you've got the FDA who regulates what comes into the states as far as drugs and devices, you know, yet medical devices and drugs are completely allowed within the EU and, you know, the rest of the world years, sometimes decades before they're allowed here, you know. And it's because we're kind of behind in the times. And so you've got American citizens who are actually flying around the world sometimes to get medical treatments that aren't actually allowed here in the States, but are completely fine.
Well, so there's that. And then there's another business issue. I don't know if I'm skipping ahead on topics, but California just announced they want to start giving dividends back. So Alaska gets oil dividends, yep, back to the states, or back to the citizens of citizens, whatever.
Yep.
So California is now saying the same thing, but now for data. So as a, that was, yeah, it was announced just this week, but they want to give back every citizen in California. You get a check based on data dividends per, because people are charging for data.
I am trying to understand that for the population size of California, how exactly are they going to process all of this? And I mean, it's going to be nominal, yeah, at that point. It's going to be like, okay, for the size of the population of California, congratulations, you got 3 cents. Yeah.
No, it's the other way around. So Google is basically their whole business plan is based off of data. So they're going to be taxed based on this data, and then that dividend goes back to the citizen of California.
Oh,
that would be an interesting.
So yeah, that's a kind of a weird, and I see Kurt kind of, what the heck?
Kurt's like, I've got Kurt's thoughts on this.
Plus, put your tinfoil hat back on, because you assume they're not already doing that, right? You assume.
I should make myself a tinfoil hat.
We need to bring you on.
You assume this stuff's not already happening. Like you assume, like, oh, that's a lot they have to do. You assume that's not already being done,
I know,
right?
I know.
They just have to flip the switch where they pay you for it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
God, I want to stay a little naive, okay? Just give me a little bit of ounce of hope.
Did we talk about this yesterday?
We already know that.
Yeah. Google's like, see, we're listening to you already.
Yeah. As long as your cell phone's out, they're listening to you.
I was going to say, how many times have you been on Facebook and said, I literally just had a conversation and now I'm getting an ad for this?
Why,
you never looked at it.
Yeah.
Because they're listening to you all the time.
One thing they did in China, and so they have what's called WeChat, right? That's the app that they have there. And it's basically Facebook, Instagram,
Square.
It's Grubhub, Square. Yeah. I mean, everything that we have individualized, you know, our approach in the States is make something specialized and make it really good. Their approach was, let's have one app to rule them all. And the idea there is that, again, it consolidates data, right? And they use it that way. But interestingly enough, with Google, they're the forefront. They have the best scientists in the world that are AI driven. And they talk, I was reading this book, it's very interesting to talk about. We talk about AI, but there's actually two things that they talk about for AI. One is general AI, like we come to know it now, like it's smart. It tells you what's going on. It predicts for you. Then there's AIG, which is more general AI, which we would think of as a human consciousness. That's that singularity event. Yeah. And, you know, they're predicted that that's supposed to happen, could, in 2030, right? If the progression seems happening. So in 2030, we would have conscious AI. Mm-hmm.
If Sia would give up her data.
If she would give up her data.
Yeah.
So by 2030, she will.
I've given up on Facebook, okay? Back off.
Yeah.
Again, it reminds me.
Give you a token for it.
Again, reminds me of yet another Black Mirror episode, and I forgot the name of that one as well, but it's one of my favorite ones, which was a guy passes away, and he comes back to life in a doll form of all his social media posts, and his former partner has to rectify this guy is, in essence, everything that she fell in love with. But it was based on his face or his social media posts, so it's kind of off.
Right, the best version of it.
The best version of him. Right.
Oh, that's also another Netflix episode where they come back in time and they're trying to fix the correct time, but then she lands in the wrong person, and they take over a person that's dying or dead or whatever, and then it's all based off of social media posts.
Oh, is it? I better improve my social media posts because I am not
so
very
it
good.
Is worth only showing the highlights of your life. If you're going to come back as that person,
just
I better put the loving wife and mother on there ASAP.
Okay, so we're talking about AI and automation being the next one. We talked about AI and automation with Raj Daniel, CJoy, Corey, and recently Corey Copeland. Again, his Carl was on the robotics side. But recently there was announcements here locally in Dallas area that PepsiCo is laying off individuals. They have doubled down on the relentless invest in automation. Based on our interviews, it could be a very good thing, but I can hear the immediate pitchfork. This is a bad thing. So guys, what are your thoughts? Is this a canary in the coal mine?
No, because I think it's solving another stupid problem, which is the swivel chair problem. One of my former employers had 12 different billing systems, and that's only like for one stupid thing. So I think they're just solving stupid problems.
So, I mean, so in essence, are we talking about this announcement maybe sounds like a big old like, or is it they're just consolidating their 300,000 applications and they're just consolidating it down? Is that part of like maybe a transformation within digital transformation?
It's a standard digital transformation announcement. It's not, it sounds worse than it actually is.
Yeah. I mean, I think here's the thing right now in America, we kind of raise our hands at everything like, oh my gosh, we're getting rid of jobs. Like, oh my gosh, like, wait, stop. You know, this is horrible. But at the end of the day too, what we have to do, you know, I mean, we're a capitalist society, you know, so we have to let businesses be able to make money. And in sometimes that means transformation. It means that there are jobs that are now obsolete, you know, that we're now able to consolidate, that we're able to, you know, move down a chain line. And I think that's exactly what they're doing here.
And I don't mean to sound heartless, but sometimes you just got to cut the fat.
Yep.
Wow.
I agree with that.
Damn, wow. Girl. No, let me tell you. Yes.
Well,
but I mean, no.
Americans, we got a lot of fat.
Well, and a lot of people get really comfortable. But what were you going to say, Kurt? Sorry.
No, I think that, you know, with everything that you look at on as far as job loss, the one thing that I would like to see happen, if they are going to do a job cut because of technology, give the people an opportunity to reskill.
Yeah.
Let them become part of that transformation. That's one of the things that really frustrates me. Instead of just putting them out on the street, help reskill them. And we do have people here in Dallas, by the way, that have got academies with grants that, so if you are in that process or you got caught up in that, there are people here in Dallas-Fort Worth that that do have grants for helping people transition into other roles.
Because it could be like 12 weeks of a coding camp and you can be back on track.
Right.
Yeah, you mentioned Luddites earlier. It's, you know, it's called the Luddite fallacy, right? It's the idea that they rage against, you know, the automated loom machines because they're like, oh, these are going to take our jobs. They were the, you know, manual loom makers, and it didn't happen. And throughout history, automation and the inventions have self-corrected, meaning the people that were in those jobs, you know, there was a short time of pain, and then it became something else. So you can talk about AI or drones. Now the people that are replaced by doing that are going to be needed for drone repair, right? And doing stuff of that nature. So it just changes what the focus is of the job. It doesn't really has never shut down an economy by having an advancement yet. So we're trying to figure that out. But, you know, I agree with your point, though. You know, the proactive approach would be reskill them for these other type of roles. That would be much more beneficial to the economy of any country, let alone, you know, the world, if we did something like that.
So, okay, so this goes into my next conversation, which may or may not be controversial. Is it the responsibility of the corporation that's making that decision to retrain their workforce or let them go, knowing full well that maybe that potentially that industry is evolving? So I'm going to lay off PepsiCo a little bit and mention, you know, the fact that the whole trucking industry, and I made a comment about that in my own LinkedIn post, was, you know, Amazon has been seen using driverless trucks. Yep. And they've just recently announced that they have a partnership with an electric truck company. I'm trying to find my notes here. Rivian, yep, is the electric truck maker. So this is not just one company, one brand. No one's going to be vilified here. This is definitely a trend that's happening. So who's responsible?
So real quick, there's on that connected truck space, Rivian just got very heavily invested into by another very large, one of the big three, well, big two, because the third one's a disaster, but General Motors just very heavily invested into Rivian. So there's that. Daimler Chrysler keeps on calling out Tesla over and over again because, not Daimler Chrysler, but Daimler Mercedes, the Germans keep on calling out Tesla on the semi-truck front, because most of European semi-trucks are still Mercedes, if not Volvo. So those guys have very heavily experience in the trucking industry. Obviously, Tesla is doing this. HEB, for the longest time, for our local Texans that we love, HEB, they've been doing a lot of testing on automated trucks, and they've got fleets roaming around. The other thing about Amazon is they're kind of a disaster. When they do holiday season stuff, either Prime Day or Cyber Monday, Black Friday, whatever you want to call it, they usually run two trucks, one unloaded and one loaded. So that way, if one truck breaks out, they can just switch trucks and then keep on going.
Wow.
So they don't have their logistics sorted out to save their life whatsoever. So this is even more so. And on a regular basis, they catch their trucks on fire, because if you load a truck wrong, a semi-truck wrong, the brakes catch on fire. That's a known issue. So basically, there's a whole bunch of things that Amazon's doing there. But unrelated to that, Amazon's been screwing around with this for the longest time. They still haven't figured out the last mile. They're trying to sort that out on their own. So that's also driverless, and that's probably why they're messing around with the smaller company. But that's like Drive.ai here locally. That's also the fact that they are still using U-Haul trucks to do the last mile. And they're trying to mess around with drones too. So it's not like, oh no, we're taking the trucks away. We're also trying to figure out how to deliver stuff that's not even needing a car at all, period. And on top of that, Uber and Lyft are going away from cars as well. They're going to scooters and the helicopter that we're going to get here in Dallas in 2020.
Yep. Well, to kind of chime on to your stuff with Amazon, and not to chide away from what you were talking about, but I mean, you see Amazon, Stamps.com just lost like, 50% of their stock prices because they now broke with USPS because of the fact that they're saying that, hey, Amazon has completely changed all of the deliveries. And so they can no longer compete because everybody wants two-day delivery. And USPS just can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so now they've officially broken ways with them and are now looking for other ways to partner. So, I mean, you see it in a bunch of different ways, and you're right. So, I mean, okay, on the employment base, how does that then impact everybody else, right? Should we be responsible for retraining and re-educating those employees? And I think to a certain point, we should. At the end of the day, you're going to find those employees, I think, that are like, well, hey,
my job's been obsolete for the last 10 years and somebody finally just noticed, but for the last 10 years, I've just kind of been collecting a paycheck.
And there's my red stapler.
You know, oh my God. They're going to be kind of perfectly fine, right? And then you're going to get the guys that are going, hey, no, look, I've got, you know, 20, 30 more years in me. Like, I need something else to do. Like, please teach me something new. And so I think you're going to have two camps. I think you're going to have a camp that is open to re-education and learning something new. And I think you're going to have a camp that's going like, hey, all right, just like phase me out. And I'm kind of good with that. Like, give me my severance and let me go.
I don't know if they're going to be so good with that. I think it's going to
we saw that happen with Verizon.
Yeah.
I mean, that just is in the process of happening like in December. Is like December 28th was like one of their big days. And so there was the optional, I mean, for you to take the package or not, the layoffs were going to happen. But it was like the first round, they're the ones that got the best deal. And so that's a reality.
Well, you know, to kind of go back to you know, Pepsi and sort of what we were talking about before, I think that, you know, when you look at these sort of layoffs, I think you talk about like who's responsible for retraining these folks. And, you know, you had mentioned that this idea that somebody's been obsolete for 10 years and somebody just noticed. And that does happen. I think that does happen where you have someone working on a line and someone out there's long, long ago solved the problem of how we automate that line. And we just, nobody's just, there's been no investment dollars in it, right? But the minute someone decides that the best way to spend $5 million is not on salaries, but on retooling this line to automation, all those jobs that were on that line go away. And I think that there's a responsibility lies on both sides, right? You know, I actually started out my career as a systems engineer, working on like Microsoft systems. And I decided to completely retool and become a developer later on. And that's how I ended up in my current career. And people were like, well, you spent like, 15 years as a systems engineer. Like, why would you start now to be a developer? And I was like, well, at my age, I have more working years ahead of me than behind me. So why wouldn't I restart? It's never too late to restart. And my job, because I showed interest in that, my workplace gave me the opportunity. They sent me to training and they gave me it. And so I think that, you know, there has to be some willingness for the company to make those investments where people show the desire. But, you know, you're not, you know, a guy who's worked on a assembly line his entire life isn't going to wake up tomorrow and spontaneously show the desire to become a developer
maybe not have the opportunity.
Correct.
Right.
So we have to, I think that there has to be responsibility on both sides to communicate, to say, you know, and I think, you know, we'll keep on going back to Pepsi. Indra had mentioned that, you know, in one of her meetings that, you know, automation was going to be a thing.
Yep.
And jobs were going to go away. And she had mentioned that publicly in the investor meetings. Okay. She said this is going to be the future, and machine learning, big data, these are the skills. You have to start learning these skills now if you want to keep up, and everybody in the company is going to have to know this no matter where you are. So, you know, they give that direction, and there is some responsibility, I think, if the company says, you know, we'll invest in your training, but you have to tell us that you want to do this. Because if you don't, if you're just content and you think that, you know, 0 day is going to come and we're just going to start retraining you then, you're too late at that point. You know, we're ready to move you out at that point. And if you're not ready to transition to something else immediately, then, you know, that's partially on you, right?
So I think you have like the perfect segue to the next topic. It's something that I found. I will give credit to LinkedIn yet again. Not that I'm trying to recruit anybody on LinkedIn to talk to us. there was a graphic that's going around right now on the top 15 global brands from 2000 to 2019. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but in the year 2000, the top five brands from number one to five, actually, no, I'll go five to one just for drama. Nokia, Intel, IBM, Microsoft, Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola was the number one brand in 2000. Then in 2010, from five to one again, Google, GE, Microsoft, IBM, Coca-Cola. 2018, Coca-Cola, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Apple.
So you see the likes of Toyota, McDonald's, HP, Cisco, Intel, GE, they all dropped off. So what does that say to us, you guys, with what you were talking about of how companies and corporations have to retool themselves for the next generation revolution that's coming down?
So, you know, it's really interesting. It goes again to this idea of, you know, in America, especially for entrepreneurs, you know, you can come in, you can have an idea, we can talk about this, then you can copyright it and you can protect yourself.
Right.
Right. You have protection, a governmental protection against someone coming against and taking over your business and running you out. Right. You can still might be run over by a big business that can, you know, capitalize on something similar better, but it's still some type of protection. And I go back into China. They have an economy that's set up around scrappy fighting. So there's no protection. So they go in there and they have to have the best idea. They have to do it better than everybody else, and they have to adapt and on the fly, go, be a little better, have their hands in everything. And so it's almost like you've developed a culture that knows how to succeed in a very competitive environment. And for you, see, you watch with these companies here that come in there, I bet you soon you start seeing Huawei and WeChat and X Plus and all those from China start to come out as the bigger names, because they're starting to compete and take over by winning the local businesses, not trying to just be this big, huge entity that comes in and says, we do it the best and you're gonna go our way or not. The imperialist, you know, idea is fighting a more guerrilla warfare with a Chinese type idea.
Well, there's that, and I think also we're struggling with, we go back to it over and over and over again, which is our education system's fairly broken as well.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, you're going there.
No. So,
And it was funny. I was talking to a professor I work with in a lot of heavy research at UTD, and we were talking about Alexa today and live streaming. And one of the things he's doing is developing stuff for Instagram and the 5G network and things like that. And it's funny is just talking to him and trying to get him corporate grants and research funding and things like that. The stuff and the level of things that he's working on kind of versus what I know is out there and what a startup is working on and dropouts are working on and everything else. It goes back to, I don't think we're training our folks right. And then also outside of the US, we're not training our folks correctly to do day-to-day things. I mean, we're not retooling our society correctly to actually grasp stuff that we're doing. And even schools fight this, right? They don't want to become a technical college, but we need more technical colleges. We need more people to be coded in boot camp coding versus, well, I can write a paper or I can write something or I can do this. And that's all ethereal and I can give PowerPoint presentations all day long, but we're not training on the actual how to do of this stuff.
It's the testing and regurgitating that we're teaching to test where, I mean, right now my kids are 6 and 7. They do some coding. They have like a Harry Potter app that they play with. But I mean, it's really like critical thinking skills, like how to analyze something and come up with that. Like, that's the stuff I want them working on right now, because I feel like, and I partially homeschool because I don't believe in public schools, but that's the stuff I want them learning. So you do that. Like, from what I learned, like, I can go work with anybody. I can figure anything out, and it's not, I know how to memorize something and regurgitate it back to you and then on to the next thing. And I just think that to me is the most important thing that we're stripping kids from nowadays, like little, not to college, but it's just sad to me.
Well, I think, you know, it goes beyond that. I think you were kind of alluding to it. It's not just about retooling your workforce, though. It's about retooling the companies themselves. There was I wish I remember the numbers off the top of my head, but there was some numbers that used to go around where if you looked at the Fortune 500, and then 20 years later looked at it, there was a certain fairly consistent percentage of companies on the Fortune 500 that literally didn't exist 20 years later.
Yeah.
Like, they were Fortune 500 companies, among the best companies, and 20 years later, a certain percentage of them didn't exist. One of my favorite examples I use for folks is about companies retooling is Nintendo. And I know it seems weird, but I often ask people, hey, when do you think Nintendo was founded? And people will go, you know, younger people will be like, I don't know, the 90s. I'm like, yeah, I was playing Nintendo before then. They go the 80s and the 70s, 60s. And I was like, try 1889.
Really?
Nintendo was founded in 1889 and was a playing card company. And most people don't realize this. And they actually came over to the U.S. and they actually came over. Their executives came over in the early 20th century to visit with the what was at the time the largest U.S. Playing card company in the world. It was one of the companies in the U.S. And they were like, we're going to visit this company and figure out how we're going to grow Nintendo to be a competitor globally. And they went to this company and they were like less than 20 employees and 3,000 square feet. And this was the largest playing card company in the world. And at that moment, their president realized, this is never going to be a thing. We're never going to grow into this massive company with playing cards. And so they started experimenting with, you know, the electronics in the 40s, 50s, 60s, plastic toys. The little grabbing claw arm that you see, that little grabbing claw arm was actually invented by one of their custodians, one of their janitors. And he became one of their engineers. And he's actually one of the guys who invented the original Nintendo video game system now. But like,
talk about re-educating.
Like, exactly. And so the idea, you know, we're talking about, it's not just so many companies are basically like, we don't do that. You know, so many companies are like, oh, we're not a technology company. Well, I hate to break it to you. If you're a Fortune 500 company, you're now a technology company.
If you're any company in this day and age, you're a technology company.
So the idea that we're moving beyond this, and now you start to have companies like Walmart, where Walmart is buying service companies and service businesses, and it won't be long before Walmart says, you know, there's a gold mine here. Like, look at Amazon. Yeah. Amazon sell all, most of their sales come from products they sell.
Yeah.
But all of their revenue comes from Amazon Web Services.
Yeah. Yep.
All of their revenue comes from Amazon Web Services. And so it's not going to be long before you have companies like Walmart where they've invested in these service companies where they're going to start, well, what if we packaged and resold the service companies that we bought?
Well, and I kind of feel like, you know, looking or hearing Sia's list there of the companies that have transitioned on and off of these over the years, I think we're seeing utilitarian companies fall off and we're seeing lifestyle companies rise up. You know, you look at Apple taking number one. I mean, just yesterday I was with a group and the speaker that we had talked about how he had been an Apple guy all his life, had recently switched over to an Android phone, and he was like, oh my gosh, it was amazing. He's like, the camera was better. Everything was better. He's like, but Apple makes my life easier. Everything syncs. I'm able to text from every device. So 3 weeks into it, I switched back to Apple. He's like, but I can tell you Android is 100% a better product. But I am willing, because of the utilitarian into fitting into my lifestyle, to use an inferior product. So, and I think that's what we're seeing with this list here, is we're seeing that it's more about the lifestyle versus the utilitarian uses. And that's what you're seeing companies rise at. It's about the lifestyle. It's
like, well, I was going to say real quick, here's a funny story. Sia's left off a mom's group because she doesn't have an Apple phone, and all the moms have Apple phones, and she's not getting any of the texts or the invites.
Oh, I've been there, girl. I've been there.
Okay, first off, Apple mobile devices are on a decline in that context, okay? You should be happy. I don't have a BlackBerry, okay? Okay.
You're just going to miss out on one good gathering.
She's like, I've got my ring. I'm all good. Nobody's going to invite
you. And you know what? I know the real reason why I'm not part of the Frisco Moms group. I am not a mother, and therefore I'm not part
of the
Frisco Moms.
You've been embraced with open arms, except the Samsung thing.
I'm the only woman that does have an Apple. Back off.
The old Motorola would pull up.
So what's really funny is there a coincidence that we both have the 10 hats and we both do Android, and everybody else is Apple?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I'm an Android.
Hey, wait.
Oh, you got Android?
Android.
All right.
But my boyfriend is BlackBerry Android. Like, he took it a step further.
He's like true rim back style. Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say there's that, and it's really funny. It's just to that point, right? There's a lot of funny things that our competitors are running on each other. So Netflix is one of Amazon's bigger competitors, especially on the streaming video side and media acquisition side and things like that. And yet it's all run on AWS. There are other competitors like that. That one's the most obvious one, but there are 1,000 other competitors that are running on each other. There are a ton of things that compete against Microsoft that are running on Azure Cloud, which is Microsoft's own cloud. So it kind of becomes one of those things where even if you are, everything's becoming a frenemy situation too, which is kind of a fascinating state that we're in as well.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's the original product solution, whatever it is that you are selling, may or may not be the actual revenue generator, profit
profitability source, right? So I will pick on Amazon. Amazon's considered, oh my God, you can buy everything off Amazon. Actually, if you look at where the profitability, not just revenue, but profitability comes from AWS.
Yep.
There's no questions about it. And that company started out as a bookstore back in the day.
Yeah.
Pokemon Go. I want to say, I guess, because this is my nod to my nephews who are huge Pokemon kids. Back in the 90s when they were growing up, had nothing but the cards. Cards, cards, cards. And then the people somewhere decided to use the Pokemon platform, the characters, in a very early version of AR, and it freaking blew up. And now Pokemon is not branded as a card
company. Is that
still
around though? Like
Pokemon Go is absolutely still going on. Yes. No, they're trying to figure out the next generation. Okay. They're about to release it. But you know, there are people our age, Aaron, that still do Pokemon battles.
Yeah, I see. It's funny because it had a bit of a fall off and then it sort of stabilized again. I think there was some problems with the initial product where it sort of like plateaued and people were like, there's some technical challenges. And then Niantic came back and fixed all those technical challenges and added a whole bunch of... And so now when they release all the new Pokemon, they're like, we're going to put 5 new legendaries out there. Suddenly everybody's like, let's do this. I've actually seen... I had friends who... had stopped playing and now they're playing again. So,
I mean, and we have a frenemy situation, right? But I mean, I think it's relevant and it's been relevant for such a long time. I mean, you see how Apple and Microsoft were complete frenemies. I mean, they literally worked together because they needed each other. One, so that they wouldn't be considered a monopoly, you know, the other because they needed the funding. I mean, so I think it always goes hand in hand.
So, I just got the code that apparently we're running out of time here, but okay, two lighthearted topics.
Yes, right, real just, quick. We're gonna go round table, like lightning speed.
Yeah, lightning speed. Just only two, so we're gonna go easy. Lightsaber dueling as an official sport in France, and apparently I just got told also Singapore. Thumbs up or down? Kurt, thumbs up or down? Lightsaber dueling.
Go for it. Thumbs up for sure.
Yes. I own a lightsaber.
Silent partners are giving thumbs up.
They're giving thumbs up.
All right, Aaron.
I say if air guitar is a thing, like, let lightsaber be a thing. I mean,
And there are some legit rules to it. So I was like, oh my God, this is a real thing.
It gives my son hope of maybe a college scholarship at some point.
It's like the new esports, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
If I can't play League of Legends anymore, then I'm going to play some dueling saber.
We have paid multiple hundreds of dollars.
Okay, I have to ask. Okay, so if we are going to make that an official, quote, sport, that means the very delicate lightsabers that I've seen at Comic Cons and whatnot, they need to soup that up significantly.
No, mine's full on polycarbonate. I whack
you. Oh, yeah. No, I can legitimately smack you with that.
I'm so... Wow. Wait, should I be concerned or excited?
Head turn.
Yeah. Well, should I be concerned or excited that they have one and they are like, oh, no, my call polycarbonate.
And they know that they can smack people with it? What's going on over at your house?
This is like 5 years ago.
Oh, apparently
that's some
current.
Funky role playing going on over there.
Okay. All right. Do you have a Princess Leia outfit, Leslie?
Don't knock it till you try it. Nerds of the world unite.
Yeah.
I am all for it. Okay, and the final thought of the evening is article written about women driving podcast growth. So there was a couple articles I read where they said the growth of podcasting has been the result of women driving it. And so one little author wrote that the 2018 was the year of women in podcasting. Thoughts on that? Aaron, I'm looking at you since we're the women in podcasting.
I mean, of course, I think it's amazing, but... I've been podcasting now for 5 years, so so it's been a while. But I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you like I know, because here's what's sad is I listen to all male podcasts mostly. That's bad.
But no, okay. So I was going to talk to you about.
But
this
I listen to it a lot.
But could it be argued that the women-driven podcasts are not necessarily business-related? It tends to be about lifestyle. It tends to be about motherhood.
There's that. But here's a problem too. Like a lot of women, and I'm not saying all women, but a lot of women will be like, we're heart centered. And I believe like following intuition, but I also believe in the law. Like I always say, I believe in the law of attraction, but I also believe in the law of knowing what the hell you're doing. So like, not that these women don't, but that's like, I don't want to like listen to woo. I mean, I like it. Don't get me wrong, but I like God, so, I'm digging
so,
myself
hang on.
A hole.
I was gonna.
You don't want too woo woo, and you.
So the one guy, like the one random guy, comment on this is backwards. Is I listen to Molly Wood, who's a female, who's a tech reporter that is probably one of the best tech reporters as a podcast out there. Okay. That's female. There's another one that I listen to that's an ER doctor that's female, and that is not woo. And that one's legit science, and it is awesome to listen to that one. So there's that one. And then there's a third female one that's also more current events, kind of like what our discussion is. And that one's also female heavy as well. So
I find the business podcast up. So that's where
those are. But those are all three. Well, two of them are business because one's tech business. She goes to talk to all the tech companies, exactly what you guys are doing, just in a different bent of it all.
Except she's better.
Not really. She's just different. Yeah, honestly, her beat's just slightly different than the way
Aaron,
you guys cover
make
it.
Make new friends, but keep the old. One is silver and the other is gold.
I don't know what that means.
It means I'm gold and your new friends are silver because they're not as good as me.
OMG. It's supposed to be you have going to have different types of friends, but they might not be.
Are you trying to like say under the table that we're going to have a whole new round table next time? I'm not gold?
I'm trying to wrap it up is what okay, I'm trying to do. So on that note, you guys, I do want to give very big thanks to Kurt. I'm going to make sure I'm going to pretend I didn't know who you are, but thank you for. I'm going to edit you out, your name. That's why.
Are we going to edit out? Are we going to?
I don't know.
Well, we didn't say who we were. We can edit out.
I mean, if you want to, we can. Yeah, it's fine. We might want to edit this part out of it. Oh God, Adam.
I struggle with that too.
Jadam, Wesley, Mike. The silent couple, Aaron and me. Aaron, anything you want to add?
No, I'm good.
All right, and that wraps up another roundtable at the Innovation Calling. I am cutting us all off because I think we're starting to go down that slippery slope. We'll see you guys next month.
Bye.
All right.